that are of this group, you know, like,
so they're not one group, like Tam, like they are different, but they hang out with each other. They like Ahmed and Ibrahim and Hermes are very good friends, and they are friends with Malaka. Aya is goes out, meets them occasionally, but she lives her own world, and she's a good translator. They all hang out in downtown Cairo, mostly, and so I try to be diverse in the editing of the anthology, but I made a mistake. I didn't pick people from who are writing and living in Alexandria or other places. So that's a mistake. So this is a very Cairo anthology. So I'm totally biased here. But just there's always aesthetic preference, there's always access, like, can you find them? There's a poet I really regret not including. His name is Montasser Abdelmargoud. He's wonderful. He lives in Alexandria, he's great, but I didn't know about him at that point of time. So anyway, So they live together, they hang out in, not live together, they live in Cairo, they hang out in coffee shops, and they are very different from each other. Because, like, you notice the language is very, very different. Malaka is her own person, Hermes is almost a reminiscent of Lautréamont and Rimbaud, and then Nada is more pop culture-y, Aya is very soft and abstract, and Amira is a conceptual poet, and just, and it's like there is all like all spectrum, and so the aesthetics. So one thing also as I'm editing the anthology, just like when you take language that are very different in Arabic, people with different language, you almost flatten them in English. There's almost an act of flattening. Like, and I knew that, like, because I read anthologies of Arabic poetry, and there's some, these poets are close to each other aesthetically, though, not very radical. But other anthologies, you get a poet that is just completely metric and completely rhyme with a poet who is, like, extremely radically experimental, and you put them in the same book, and there's a, and something is just wrong about that, but that is all what is available, that is what it is. So anyway, am I saying?
So, in terms of this book, are some of these people writing in forms?
No, they are not. None. They are all rebelled. They are like further generation of the generation who rebelled on form. So the 90s generation, who people wrote in the 90s, were the ones who just basically said goodbye form, and we are just completely forget it. We are writing in a free verse form. And so that was a generation, and that generation went into political wars over their formal intent, their formal work. The abandoning of form led to serious amount of attacks on them and things like that. So there was a huge disputes and fights, and there was a very famous, like, kind of Mahmoud Darwish attacking them and they attacking Darwish. It was a mess. And here's the end. Like, Darwish said it in a very passive-aggressive way. He talked about, like, poet who wrote the prose poem, the free verse. What do you think of the prose poem? The name for it is a prose poem, but it's not really a prose poem in the Western canon tradition. It's more like free verse. So they told him, what do you think of the prose poem and the prose poem writer? He said, El Mutanabbi, which is ancient Egypt, Arab poet, he said, El Mutanabbi is more poetic than me and them. So it was just, that was kind of very, very triggered the war. So there was, like, articles against Darwish and people split and things like. Anyway, that is the 90s generation. So that is where, like, Tamer Fathi, the guy who wrote about the cloth, came where things quieted down. And he was, like, he's from Alexandria, actually. He's actually not from Cairo. He's from Alexandria, and he lives there. So he's actually, maybe I didn't really, wasn't really that biased after all. So he lives in Alexandria, and I don't know, he was in Palestine somehow when I was trying to get a hold of him. They are all my friends except Tamer. I had just one phone conversation with him. And anyway, so Tamer just came, and he had no fathers or mothers. He just, like, just basically he was his own poet, and with some distance to the 90s. Now these poets came, and old generation, I wrote that in the introduction, old generation war was over. Nobody cared. The prose poem won, and it's desert, and there is nobody cares. And that happens in the Mubarak era. Nobody cares about poetry, nobody cares about experimental poetry, just nobody cares. And there's text in the internet, there's tons of text in the internet. So these poets were just doing their own thing completely. They realized they have no ties to anybody. Nobody ties them, they don't owe anybody anything, nobody owes them anything. So the act of writing poetry in the middle of that is an act of true commitment. Like, it is, like, they hate the word commitment. They're just, because they're all just basically, they're like, oh, we just drink coffee in coffee shops and we are just doing whatever we like. So don't make us heroes and they are not. They don't want to be, or they are not interested in that. They're just poets who are writing because they care about their own writing, and they hang out with each other, and then that's it. And that is their approach. So it's very interesting. There is no debate. Nobody... Like the 90s generation had people at least fighting them. These ones just out there, just like they just have their friendship. That's basically it.
So in the slightly earlier generation, yeah, there was a lot of interaction with other Arab countries.
Yeah, yeah, there are.
Yeah, and does that continue now?
No, right now, actually, there is, right now there is Facebook, and all these poets love Salah Fayyad, the Iraqi poet who lives in the Philippines, and they try to contact him over Facebook, and they learn a lot from his poetry, because Salah is a god for these poets, because he did his own thing. He's also, Salah Faye is doing his own thing completely, and have abandoned all wars, abandoned all fights with everybody, and just lives in the Philippines with his dog and writing poetry. And it's just like, meanwhile, there are other poets who are like, from his generation, who are still sticking, is like wanna, like Adonis or whatever, wanna have a place in the culture life. Salah says, like, sayonara, I am not interested. Yeah. Don't make me a hero. I'm just sitting. I'm a man with a dog writing poems. And he's that's his pose, really. He's not making this stuff up. I met him. He just say, like, he genuinely don't care. And there is some air of, like, of authenticity to the one who doesn't want to be a mentor of anybody. People want him to be their mentor. That is just the nature of things. Like, when someone doesn't want to do it, doesn't want to be there, people just like, oh, you have something I want to learn from. So, anyway.
And you've been translating some of Salah.
I'm translating some of Salah, and I'm hoping to get a book out of his poems out. Yeah. I would really, I have 30 pages and I am slacking. So maybe that would be a reminder to go back to Seattle and work a little bit.
Yeah. He came to the US.
He came to Seattle.
Yeah.
He got the book published by a publishing house from Seattle. So he came to the AWP.
Right.
Yeah, and I swear it's true. Like, I sat with him for 4 or 5 hours. We had drinks together and a bite. And I learned in these 5 hours what I would have learned in a full course of poetry. About, like, he would just move from history to freedom, to everything. And just in a conversation, advice about love, everything. And meditation and vegetarian eating and everything. And he told me something that was amazing. He said, like, if I met Salah Faye, I will kill him. He was arguing strongly against strong identity. He said, like, I don't know who Salah Faye is. If I met him, I swear I'll kill him. And he was just like, he was not being crazy. He was just genuinely, that's how he felt. He's not someone who is like, I think he was a Kurdish, who was a member in the Kurdish Communist Party, and he was like, actually not someone who was, and he had, I think, 2 or 3 execution. Not assassination, just sentences in Iraq on him. So he left to London, lived there for a while, then got married and moved to Philippines, and just that's what he does. And terrific poet. But this is the relationship. But there is no like, I think actually in the 90s generation, the generation before, there was good connection. Like Abdelmanam Ramadan from the 70s was a very good friend of Adonis and of the Lebanese poets. In the 90s, Mohammed Metwali was a good friend of Yahya Jaber. And so there was some really, some commerce that was going more than now. Now it seemed like prose poetry or poetry is a lost cause completely. Now it is the era of the novel, the commercial novel, I guess, in the Arab world. Like there's a Booker Prize, things like that. So poetry is just like, thank God nobody cares about it. Yeah. Any questions? There's no bad questions. Please.
Amira Hanafi?
Yeah.
You said she went to school in Chicago?
Yeah.
I'm just curious about all the places that she writes. Do you know if she's been to all of them?
No, no. She's making some of the stuff up. Okay. She has been like... but that is her work. She's working with identity specifically. Because she is from an Egyptian father and an American mother, and she lived here and there. She grew up in America, so she wandered the states, but she didn't live very, she didn't travel these places. I remember when she was in Egypt, she traveled to Palestine and she came back, but she didn't do anything, like she didn't live really in Brazil or Rio or stuff like that. It's a device she's using in the poem.
She's still in Chicago?
No, she lives in Cairo. Oh. She had been living in Cairo since 2010.
Okay.
She in December 2010, that's why, yeah. She stayed. She participated in the revolution and she stayed.
Right.
Yeah, she likes it very much. She just hates the beer. Because they have only one type of beer, Stella. And after 3 years of this beer, she was just like, always like, this, it feels like drinking dirty water now. Anyway, that is the best thing to do. You want to make friends with these Egyptian poets? Go to Cairo and buy a good whiskey. And tell them you have good, you can share good whiskey and vodka with them. Because there is, for some reason, like until now, the market for, like you can't get any hard liquor. You can get it. It's not forbidden or anything like that. But I think like there's no good black market there. So anyway, so that's what I do. I bring alcohol and we hang out like usually at Hermes place and we read poems to each other. We read in coffee shop and they are a wonderful bunch actually.
What do they read?
They read, okay, so they are different.
Yeah.
So, but Hermes specifically, so they are very, very, they all know English well. That is like, I don't know about Tamil, but like the Nada, for example, Ahmad Nada gave me L'Otriamont as a gift, translated to Arabic. And they read Rimbaud, like one of the things that was amazing for them is that they came in the era of the internet. So text was available everywhere. So Hermes is influenced a lot by L'Otriamont and Rimbaud and the Sufi poets. He reads very ancient Sufi text and that is his in his like, he has more of a cosmic version. Ahmad Nada, everybody reads Kavafi. So they love Kavafi. Like they're just like, I think like when they had like an episode where one stole a Kavafi book from the other, not stole, like took it. What happened is that one of them said, bought a Kavafi copy, a translation of Kavafi for me. And the other one, hey, I'll take it, read it and give it to Maged.
And they read Kavafi in Arabic?
In Arabic. Yeah, and anyway, so what happened is like I never ended up with this copy of Kavafi, but anyway, so they read Kavafi, Rimbaud, Baudelaire, they read Salah Fay and the more contemporary Arab poets, but they have access to the web and they read everything. Malaka reads Sylvia Plath directly. She is one of her heroes. Aya is translating Lydia Davis.
Wow.
Yeah, so she's working on like translating Lydia Davis to Arabic. So they are like, all over the place. And many of them, Malaka and Aya, are English major. They studied English literature in university. And Nada is a dentist. Ibrahim was a dentist. Ibrahim and Hermes are psychiatrists. So they are like very, like have a very wide range of like professions and everything. But there is no, like, I think the only one who makes a living from literature is Aya by translating, and the rest are journalists.
Thank you.
So the translation started by a chance. I was writing a work translating the 90s generation, or more of my generation. And then Ibrahim Sayed, who was me and I became friends, that was way before the revolution and everything, sent me a poem over Facebook. And I liked the poem a lot, and I thought as an act of friendship, I would like to translate it and surprise him by translating it. I didn't want to just tell him like, hey, it's a great poem. I just wanted to do something a little bit better than that. So I translated it to English, and he loved it. And then he sent me one more poem, and I started translating him. And then Ahmed Nada, whom I didn't know then, all what I knew was Ibrahim. Ahmed Nada heard about me, and I said like, oh, I want to meet this guy. And we had some time, we end up hanging out in Egypt. And the project, at that point of time, it was after the revolution, and the project idea started coming to my mind. Like, how about translating this younger generation? One, because there were, and I'll be very frank, I don't like one of the reasons, because I liked them a great deal, like their work was beautiful. And the second, I thought like my generation of poets, like they were translated in a different anthology, but this younger generation, if I translated them in English, they might have a chance to be recognized more. And this recognition might get them like a scholarship here or some other countries. So there is a chance there for them because they're still starting and stuff like that. So there was something pragmatic, but more important, it was an act of friendship. It was act of like a recognition of them, and they are the ones who are still actively writing. Like the ones in my generation have been like dispersed and living different places and things like that. But anyway, so I translated. It was a bad translation. I translate, wait for a little bit, and come back to the translation and fix it. But what happened specifically is, I made sure that I translate every poem completely. I made a bunch of mistakes, so I translated some poems, and I left words that I didn't really know the meaning of, and to come back to it. And when I came back to it, the moment was lost and didn't work out. So I made it as a pact, like every poem has to be fully translated at the sitting. And then I leave it for like about 2 to 3 months and come back to it, tweak the English to make sure it works as an English poem. And that's it. But it's, they are very literal as much as possible. Not literal. I'm making an attempt to be very honest to the... If they say like you can do a writerly translation or a readerly, like a source text translation or a target text translation, this is 70% to 80% a source text and 30% a target. So I stick to the source as much as possible, and I tweak the result to make it work better as an English poem, but with more fidelity to the original. But there's also, in the act of translation, there's serious futility, because the poem, you can only translate the scent of a poem, but not the actual poem.
Mm-hmm. Living in Seattle, are there other people you know who read Arabic that you get together with and such?
Yes. I have a very, very dear friend of mine, Ibtihal. She actually reads Arabic and English and German, and she translates from all of this. She's just translator. She was one of the people who translated Herta Muller from German to Arabic. So she is a very good translator, and that is her job. And she's, I think, right now working on a translation of a text from German to Arabic still. It's a young adult book. But anyway, so when we meet, it's quite a rich conversation, because we can speak in multiple languages. So we can speak in Arabic, speak in English. I can't speak German, there is richness, and we have both experiences: the experience of being in Egypt and the experience of being in.
She's also Egyptian.
So the way we talk is like we speak in English, then we throw. Exactly, we throw sentences from like Egyptian movies or theater just to annotate the conversation, and it's actually very funny. So imagine like you're speaking in French, and then you throw like from The Godfather, like references from The Godfather or like something like that. So it's just, it is pretty awesome. So, there is some richness in this dialogue with friends who have the same experience. And two of my very good friends, Wael and Shehab lives in New York, Wael lives in Cairo now. And I used to share the same experience with them because they were deeply engaged in the Egyptian literary life and intellectual life. And Wael is a short story writer himself, and Shehab is an essayist. But they also did their PhDs in the States. And so there is also a dialogue there that people who it's a very rare experience. But it also was a strange and a very real experience, the opposite one, with Amira Hanafi, because Amira and I would hang out in Cairo, we'd take long walks, and we'd talk about Frank O'Hara and the conceptualist poets of America. So that was also a weirder experience. It's like, here I am in Cairo, but talking about the experimental tradition of American poetry while walking the streets of Cairo, which is also like the opposite experience, basically. So it seems a common thing is like when one's in a place, remembers the other place by its poets and its culture or whatever. I highly like if you know another language, translate their poets. It's an amazing experience. It's the closest. It also does something. It has a certain depressing nature to it for the following reason, because like once I translated these poets, I realized that I have never read poetry before as close as I read these poems. Like because when I'm doing the act of translation, I'm reading the poems so close, and I am not, I won't say I'm getting them, but I'm like just really deeply engaged with them. Then I discovered that like in the act of reading poems for the sake of, without translation being its target, that I am not as thorough, and I haven't really read the poems as I should, as deeper as when I was trying to do the work for the translation. So anyway, it's a different form of translation of reading. It is deep, it is thorough, it's wonderful, but it also renders all acts of reading as hacks for me. Am I making any sense?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
So. One more question. Any takers?
How long have you been in Seattle?
Since end of 1999, so it's 15 years now. I always thought I'm gonna leave Seattle. It's very sad. I always thought I'm in Seattle for temporary reasons. And
you came there for work?
No, I came to Akron, Ohio, and then went to San Rafael, and went to Seattle for work. And I always thought like I'm gonna leave Seattle because this place is very far in the far corner of the world, and it's very far from Egypt. So I kept thinking, and occasionally made attempt to go to Europe or go to New York or something like that, and it never worked out. And 3 or 4 years ago, I discovered that there's so many greenery in my palms. I started like writing nature poems. I'm from Cairo. I'm like as urban poet as it could get. So green poem and pets and dogs and stuff like that. And then 2 years ago, the sad part is like I went to Egypt for like about 2 to 3 months, and it was the heart of the revolution being defeated. It was the Muslim Brotherhood in power. Downtown Cairo was a dumpster. And my personal life was in a very bad shape, and I was just like sitting there. I was like, I miss Seattle. That was a moment of discovering that actually maybe Cairo isn't home, maybe Seattle is home. I don't know. So it is. So I think I am a Seattle poet now. I don't know. I feel cheapest saying it. It feels weird saying it. Anyway, so Pacific Northwest.
It's closer to the Philippines.
It's closer, yeah. Who knew I would meet Salah Faye in Seattle? That was also a weird thing. It was just, yeah. All right.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks so much. Thank you.